This is an AMI podcast. This is an AMI podcast.
Hello there, I'm Stephen Scott, blind tech user and host of Double Tap Canada on AMI Audio. Does the prospect of exciting new assistive tech keep you up at night? Oh good, it's not just me then. Double Tap Canada might just be the show for you. Check us out on whatever podcasting platform you prefer.
Welcome back. It's Now with Dave Brown on AMI Audio and AMI TV. The vaccine rollout has started in the United Kingdom. The first doses of the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine were doled out in England yesterday. As Canada continues to wait on Health Canada approval and an initial shipment, politicians, public health officials, and the military are preparing. For his perspective on this, we are joined by veteran political correspondent Craig Oliver. He joins us this morning from Ottawa. Good morning, Craig.
Good morning, Dave.
So, Craig, the first vaccinations of the vaccine have taken place in England yesterday at a London area health center. To your mind, what is the significance of this moment?
Someone described this as the shot seen around the world. The world was waiting for this. Canadians certainly were. I think that we can see at least the finish line. But it's a long way off. We would need very strong binoculars to do so. And let's just keep our perspective here. Remember that Canada still has not authorized the Pfizer vaccine. And there are already some problems starting with it. The British government has said that if you are particularly sensitive to allergies, you probably should not take this vaccine. The other problem, of course, is that it is a very fragile vaccine, requiring these giant refrigeration units, keeping the vaccine at something like 70 below centigrade. And that means, and this is going to be a big political issue, that the priorities the governments, the provinces and the federal government set for who would receive it first aren't going to be met. Because Pfizer is keeping charge of exactly how this is rolled out, and they are saying it has to stay, at least for the moment, in the 14 centers across the country, two in each of the provinces, the rest distributed. And that means they will not be able to reach out to many of these locations where the elderly are being looked after, long-term care homes. They won't be able to reach out to them. Everyone has to come to one of these centers. So what they're saying at the moment is at least the people who work in these places will be able to come down and get vaccinated. But this is going to be a big problem for the Prime Minister very quickly.
Craig, we'll get to that idea and what people are saying about the Prime Minister in just a moment. But as you said, this moment does mark a time when we can maybe see the finish line, but we still have a long road ahead. And I've got some audio to play here from British Prime Minister Boris Johnson, who says, while the vaccine eventually can make a huge difference, in the meantime, millions are still vulnerable to catching the virus.
We're finding that people don't realize quite how easy it is to transmit this disease asymptomatically, without symptoms. And one in three people is passing it on without even having any symptoms at all yourself. Do you see what I mean? So you can be a secret spreader of the disease. I don't think people have grasped that.
And Craig, along those lines, provinces are continuing to battle the second wave of the virus. And we had some news break last night. Alberta introducing much tougher restrictions. They include eliminating indoor dining, a ban on public and private gatherings, and the closure of many businesses. So let's hear from Premier Jason Kenney saying the decision comes at a critical time.
If stronger action is not taken now, we know that hundreds or potentially thousands more Albertans could die. We will not let that happen. We must act to protect lives, and we must act to protect our hospitals, plus those who depend on them.
Craig, I'm sorry we cut you off there with that sound from Jason Kenney, but in your mind, why do you think Premier Kenney finally took this step?
I think that this premier was so blinded by his ideological views, his very conservative views, his libertarian approach to things, that you shouldn't ever interfere with people's freedoms, even if the majority say that this is what they need. He's been so blinded that he has really held back the kind of situation that Alberta needed. It is in the worst shape of anywhere else in the country. It is a third the size of Quebec and Ontario, for instance, but it's got far more cases. Things are very serious. They are dire in Alberta, and he is very much to blame. He didn't learn from what everybody else has learned, which is to protect the economy, you have to first kill the virus and the pandemic. You have to win that battle before you can win the battle over the economy. And his focus has been centered on the economy, and it was not working. It is not working. And I think that of all the premiers in the country, he has been more damaged than any of them, unless Alberta is far more to the right as a province than any of us ever dreamed it was. And I just want to remind you of what Kenny said in a speech he gave months ago. He said, we're going to put up a wall to protect our most vulnerable citizens. Well, he never built that wall, and that wall is coming apart on him now.
Mm. Craig, this question is going to enter into the world of a little bit of speculation, but you do say there could be some serious damage done to Premier Kenney from a political perspective. I'm sure for a long time he did not want to make this move because of who he thought were his supporters were. But is it possible waiting this long has actually done more political damage than it was to keep the economy open?
Well, hundreds of people have died during this period when Kenney was resisting a big lockdown, which he finally agreed to do last night. He was also resisting making masks a legal requirement and wanting them in particular indoors. He was fighting that off. He kept saying this was violating the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, which experts said it was not. So, I think Mr. Kenney is going to have a lot to answer for, in my view. But in the meantime, we have to move ahead. And what Canada needs badly soon will be for, well, first, we need to get this virus approved by the government, which will come by the end of the week, we expect. But it needs to get more companies on board, particularly companies that don't require two vaccinations to become effective. And which don't require the cumbersome problem that this virus has.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So let's talk about that, Craig. Let's talk about the national picture of the COVID vaccine. As you say, Health Canada has yet to approve the vaccine, and we're still waiting on delivery of the initial doses. But we also know the devil is certainly going to be in the details of distribution. How much credit do the Prime Minister and Federal Minister of Procurement, Anita Anand, deserve for securing this initial shipment of vaccines?
Well, first, I think in the beginning, they made the mistake of putting all their eggs in one basket with this rather strange deal they made with the Chinese, which was never very clear to anyone, at least not to me, that the Canadian federal labs and the Chinese were going to work together on a virus of their own, a vaccine of their own, rather. That was never clear to anybody, but they seemed to keep coming back to that for quite a while. However, they finally realized, considering the political situation with China, the tension and stress between them, that wasn't going to work. And I will say this for them. They went ahead very quickly and lined up seven companies who can provide vaccines. And as it has turned out, the companies they chose have turned out to be the most effective companies in the world. So that was well chosen. I think the government gets credit for that. In the politics business, you don't get credit for very much, of course. And so now we're waiting for some of these other companies to get their product out there and to get it approved in Canada, because we badly need more. At the moment, remember, this is really only a beginning. We're getting what is a small amount of 250,000 doses sent to Canada from Belgium as soon as the federal government approves it. But that's just a start. We have a long, long way to go yet to get millions of Canadians vaccinated, and we're going to have to get more companies on board. And that's, I think, the next crucial step now is to get more companies out there ready to provide a proven, effective vaccine, and getting it to Canada, and getting all of that done. That's the next big step now. Although, look, we're starting. We're going to get some Canadians vaccinated probably as early as late next week, and that's good.
Mm-hmm. Craig, you mentioned that initial agreement signed between Canadian and Chinese labs, and believe me, if you couldn't figure out the finer details, the general public and I have no chance to figure that out. So certainly that definitely speaks to the complexity there. And certainly it's not been all praise for the government's handling of vaccines. A Canadian firm has gone public and said they would have had the capacity to produce the vaccine in Canada once it was developed. And again, very important to note here, it's production, not development. But what do you make of the criticism that Canada needs a more robust capacity to produce vaccines domestically?
Well, you don't have to take my word for it that is true. The Prime Minister himself has said we are going to renew this industry in Canada. And by the way, this company that, you know, the federal government did say there was no one in Canada who could produce the vaccine. That was true. But they also suggested that there was no one else who could make the vaccine. And this Montreal company say they could have done it. The Globe reported that initially, and they confirmed that yesterday. But what part of the story is that they could only have reproduced one of the AstraZeneca virus vaccine, rather, and not many others. So there were limitations there. By the way, just on the big picture of what this is going to do socially and maybe ethically, some people are seeing a two-tier Canada. Once we really start rolling with vaccinations, companies will say, you can't come into this bar or this restaurant, or we don't want you in this shopping mall unless you can show us the digital proof. Mm. And that, by the way, is a very big part of this whole procedure. They're going to have a plan for everybody to be given a digital information that they have had the first shot and maybe eventually the second. So that's going to become kind of an entree. There will be Canadians who have had the vaccine and those who haven't. Mm. And those who haven't, there may be all kinds of things that they are prevented from doing by not being able to present this document that says, hey, I'm okay. And yeah, by the way, we still don't even begin to know yet how much immunity these viruses are going to offer.
Right.
How long does the immunity stay? If it's very long, there's just so much yet to deal with that I hope that a lot of Canadians aren't going to say we can relax now because we've got a vaccine and we're out of trouble. We're not out of trouble. We're still in deep trouble.
Right. That again, echoes what we had with the clip from Boris Johnson a little bit earlier, talking about how this does mark a moment, but it certainly is not the end of the battle. And Craig, I don't want to wander too far off the road here, but you're right. There is going to be something that occurs over the next 9 months or so where we're going to be asking questions about, is it ethical to say you cannot enter this store or enter this mall if you haven't had the vaccine, when the vaccine might not be available to you yet, right? It's not a matter of choice. I didn't take the vaccine. It's that I can't take the vaccine because it's not available to me yet. So it does speak to some interesting questions and rollouts, not to mention what the feelings might be as we continue to see people experiencing death or severe illness, and what that's going to mean in terms of how people are going to point to say, you know, how come my family member wasn't given priority to get that vaccine in the
morning? Yes. I think that if you're the son or daughter of someone who died in the coming months, you're going to be pretty unhappy about a government that could not get to their long-term care home. Now, at the moment, that is not only the government's decision. Pfizer is keeping a tight control on the distribution of its product for reputational purposes, mm-hmm. if no other. Mm-hmm. So they're the ones who are saying people are going to have to go to these centers to get immunized, at least initially. And we don't know how long that initially will be, but most of these people are not able to get out of their beds and travel all the way to the centers where vaccinations will be performed. They won't be able to get there. And at least initially, this virus cannot get to them.
Craig, I know we've run a little bit long with you. Can we stick with you for a couple more minutes?
Sure, this vaccine.
I've got one more story that we need to cover that was in the news yesterday. Tell me if you've heard this sentence before. U.S. President Donald Trump ruffled some feathers yesterday when he suggested that he'd introduce an America First policy when it comes to vaccine access. It called into question whether or not the Pfizer vaccines produced in the U.S. would be blocked from entering Canada. Craig, I want to play you a clip from Intergovernmental Affairs Minister Dominic LeBlanc saying that Canada's contracts with Pfizer and other vaccine producers have provisions to ensure access to the vaccines produced outside of the United States.
So the contracts themselves contemplate that Pfizer, for example, has manufacturing facilities in Europe as well as the United States. So we're confident that there won't be any disruption in the effective and timely supply of vaccines to Canadians. We contemplated that in the procurement agreements we've signed.
So, Craig, some of these fears of a lack of access have been assuaged a little bit. But is this more bluster from a president who's made a habit of a lot of bluster over the 4 years? Or are you concerned this could have a serious impact on supply chain in Canada?
No, this is uber bluster, if I can put it that way. and it's meaningless, largely. Remember, we went through this in the case of the masks last winter. When we had a mask crisis and we had agreed to buy millions of them from 3M, and the president tried to stop 3M from delivering them. And 3M said, sorry, we've got a contract. We have a legal commitment and we're going ahead with it. Furthermore, at least with this vaccine, it is coming to Canada from Belgium, not from the United States. But there are really some questions about the president did issue a presidential order. But there are serious questions about whether he can tell companies that they can't deliver on legal commitments that they have made. And I think most of these companies will pay no attention of any kind to a president who's very much on his way out.
Mm. Yeah, Craig, I think, at this time for us, it's like playing the greatest hits when we say Donald Trump has ruffled some feathers. We're probably only going to have a few more opportunities to say that. So, might as well get it in while we can. Hey, Craig, yeah. We went a little bit long with you today. Thank you for taking that extra time and being with us to give us this perspective. And we'll talk to you again next week.
I'm happy to keep going anytime, Dave. That's never an issue for me. You have other program items to go to. I realize that.
Craig.
But if you want, I'll keep going for half an hour.
We'll just run right over the clock. We'll just cut into the next show. We'll just let it rip.
Exactly. Yeah, you bet. You bet, Dave.
Hey, Craig, thank you for this. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, my friend.
You've been listening to Now with Dave Brown. Hit the subscribe button on any podcast platform and leave us a rating and a review.
Hi, I'm Jenny Bovard. Join me monthly for Low Vision Moments, where I speak with awesome guests about some of the amusing things that happen when you're blind or partially sighted. Watch on YouTube or download Low Vision Moments from your favorite podcast distributor.